I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I'm the dude, so that's what you call me.
Charlie, don't surf!
Hoo-ah!
And we're back with another episode of Furious Cinema Podcast. I'm Pete Roberts, and I'm here with...
Sebastian.
My friend Sebastian. And today we're going to be talking about the latest Martin Scorsese movie, which is Killers of the Flower Moon. I saw it at the theater. Did you see it? You saw it at the theater too, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies where it's tough to... Like, you know, I'm such a huge fan of his crime movies, like, you know, his gangster movies. And this one is just a different, like a departure from that. It's a lot darker, like, you know, in a different way. It's like, you know, because it's based on historical events, but it's not the type of thing where, you know, like you're like hooting and hollering through the movie. It's very like, you know, it's very grim, like, and I also see it as like a, you know, it's white supremacy versus, you know, Native American, you know, peoples, like, you know, it's that type of thing, like, you know, that type of genocidal type, you know, themes, like those types of things going on.
Yeah, in
which
a
is,
way,
which is tough to like, you know, it's tough to like, you know, feel good. Like you don't walk out of the movie feeling good. You just don't. Yeah. I mean, it's just not that type of experience. But
and if we're honest about it, then even his early gangster movies or the, you know, those that are sort of form the high point of his career, let's say, from the fanboy perspective, even those showed kind of a grim part of history, but still they were more, that was more pop culture, and it was more, it wasn't as off-putting as this. I mean, still, of course, you watch the one or the other scene in Casino and it's disgusting, and yeah,
but also another thing, like,
and whatever, but still you like him because they're cool, and because they're played by
different characters, but another thing about the differences is, like, we're talking like smaller groups of people versus, like, you know, a whole race of people, you know what I mean? It's like a whole, like, you know what I'm saying, like the Native American, you know, Osage Nation versus, like, you know, all these like white settlers that are coming in and trying to steal their, you know, basically steal their land, steal their money, and, you know, whatever, versus like just gangsters, like, you know, robbing some people or something. And it's just a different type of situation to me. I don't, you know, it's similar, but not exactly the same. You know what I mean? It's just a different type of.
No, yeah, I know what you mean, because the gangsters themes, and Goodfellas didn't commit genocide, obviously.
Right, it's just not, exactly, it's not, you're dealing with different things, but, like, as far as the, you know, I loved, like, you know, the opening with the Indians dancing in the oil. I love that whole scene with Robbie Robertson's music playing. That was really cool, like, that guitar groove. I just love that. That was awesome.
It had a different beat, I would say. I mean, his later movies do have a different beat general, but it has a very I thought it had a very well, let me put it differently, it carried a very mixed message in the first half, especially.
Right.
That comes, it comes through in the rhythm of the movie and the tone, and then when it comes together, when it becomes more clear to us as the audience what's really going on, then it takes a dark turn. But in the beginning, you're not really sure. Is this more like it looks a little bit like that TV show Yellowstone, you know, the the guy who owns a lot of land and stuff happens, and family is very important, yada yada yada. And
it has like a Western vibe to it, and also it reminded me a little bit of Gangs in New York, like a little bit of like when Amsterdam in that movie like arrives like on the, you know, in the port of the you know, the New York, whatever it is, the, you know, the, I don't know if it wasn't Ellis Island, but like wherever he lands, and like he's kind of walking through, seeing what's going on and stuff, and that's sort of like how this one starts. Like he kind of
it's actually the movie arrives. The movie of his that I think is closest in I'm not gonna say in style, probably not in style, but in tone and in his approach to history, I would say is very similar.
Which one now?
Gangs of New York.
Oh yeah. It does sort of like it's kind of like touches, has little accents of that movie in there. And then also, like, I guess you could sort of compare, like, well, actually, you could compare Bill the Butcher to King Hale, because they're both sort of like white supremacist guys. I mean, that's like where they're coming from. Like, everybody is beneath them. Like, you know, Bill the Butcher looked down on the Irish and, like, you know, all those different people. And then King Hale, like, look, kind of, you know, he says he's a friend of the Osage, but obviously he's not. You know, he just treats them like they're, you know, good as white people are or whatever. You know, that, you know what I'm trying to say, like, you know, that
in the end, nobody is really a friend of them. It's all about greed, really. And
exactly.
On the other hand, that shouldn't come as a surprise, because greed is a motive in Scorsese's movies, or in most Scorsese movies. I didn't do like a statistic, but
yeah, the crime ones, anyways. I mean, you know, most, that's what they deal with, is like, you know, criminals robbing people, and, you know, that's just part of, like, you know, in Casino, that's all about just money, all the whole thing. But this is the same idea. But I guess when they first did the movie, like, you know, they were going to do it from the FBI angle and, like, cover, and, like, Leonardo DiCaprio was going to play Tom White, the character Jesse Plemons ends up playing in the movie. And they decided not to do that. They decided to go with, you know, to see it from the inside out, as versus the outside in, because in this movie, as they were saying, it's not a who didn't do it, because we know what's going on from the very beginning, like in the very first scenes between Ernest and King, like, you know, they're talking and, you know, they're having like their little funny little conversation about stuff. And, you know, that's probably the most humor in the movie, is that little, you know, initial conversation between them. But then, you know, as it goes on, like, you see, like, exactly what he's getting at. Like, you know, it's all about, like, getting the land and marrying into the families and stuff like that, and that type of thing. Right.
And it's weird that they, I mean, it's basically the Burkhardt perspective, but it's not so much his perspective as it's the story, or let's say the filmmaker following him around, because I would say that Burkhardt, he's not a smart man.
No, he's
not cold hearted, and he's not as calculating as his uncle. He's being used because he can be easily exploited.
He's gullible.
His uncle knew that the minute the guy stepped in. He knows, okay, this guy's a broken war veteran. He's got no education, whatever. And
as Brendan Fraser's character would say, he's a dumb boy.
Yeah, precisely.
Which is the funniest line in the movie to me. I love that scene. It was just like, where did that come from? That was like hilarious.
I don't know. Some people some people took issue with his performance there. But
he was so loud. Like, I mean, I'm a fan of him, because I kind of, like, he was like kind of popular when I was like a teenager. Like, in all those movies I'd watch, like Airheads, and, like, you know, he was in like School Ties and like all those like 90s movies, like Gen X movies and stuff. So it was cool to see him in this film.
Encino Man.
Yeah, Encino Man and all that stuff. But I mean, like, when he comes out, like, he's like so loud, and like he really stands out from the, like, everyone else in the movie, which I liked. I mean, I thought it was good, but, you know, it just I mean, I suppose some people didn't care for that type of, you know, performance, but, you know me, I love like big, bold performances. So I just thought that was like fun. You know, it was sort of like
it was a bit inconvenient, I would say. And I think this made me think a lot, because the other recent Scorsese movie I thought was super inconvenient. In fact, it was so annoying that I'm happy that I survived it, and I'm never going to watch it again, which is Silence.
Oh, yeah, Silence.
It's not a bad movie, but it's just...
When you say, what are you saying, inconvenient? Like, what do you mean, like, exactly? Like,
it's like, it's painful, it's...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like
pain and shame, and it's annoying, and it's either too it's loud annoying. Or too silent, or it's like, you don't really, you want nothing to do with it.
It's very like off-putting, like, or something.
Yeah. Whatever. And I wonder, like, he must be aware of that effect. So I wonder if that's almost like a stylistic device,
or a way you could say it is, he doesn't make it easy for the viewer. Like, you feel like you're kind of like always like working to like the movie or something. I don't know.
Because, you know, if we're talking about colors, so you could easily have that same movie told from an Osage perspective and still have DiCaprio on the poster. That's not the issue. I mean, that's something that he's been criticized for. Like, why not go the whole nine yards? Yeah. But you know, they could have picked someone who's more likable. Like there must have been plenty. There are plenty of characters at the center of that story, or you could even tell it from the King Hale perspective or whatever. And
It would be so, I don't know how they would do that and have it be like, you know, it would be like having like
we
the
don't
villain
know. I
like
mean,
tell
they
the
probably
story or
have
something.
to.
But
Yeah,
yeah,
probably
but
have to
it's like
read
the
the
thing is,
novel.
it's like I was trying to like think about what, like, you know, like what how the dynamic is between the characters. And it's like, to me, it's just basically victims and victimizers. So it's like, you can't, there's no like, you know, you like, you know, Leonardo is a great actor and stuff. And, you know, and Ernest is, he's kind of like a dim bulb and stuff, but it's like, you know, but you're not, he's not like a hero of the story. And then King is a villain, but you know, he's not like a total hateful person. I mean, you know, another, actually none of them are really like, you know, they're, you know what they're doing, and like, you don't like what they're doing, but at the same time, they're not like completely like hateful or anything. And I mean that they're not like, you know, you can kind of see some of the, some of their, you know, human side of the, of their personalities and stuff, but it's just, you know, there's nobody like really to root for in the movie, like, other than Lily Gladstone's character, obviously, because we're, you know, we're seeing what she's going through and stuff. But I mean, she spends a lot of the movie sick and stuff too, which is like weird. So it's like, you know, you're, she doesn't get to like, you know, really, she doesn't really have a lot of time to, like, you know, stand up and be like a hero. Like she's not, she is heroic in her own way, but because of what she went through, but it's like not like a, the normal thing where like, you know, she fights back. She does a little bit, but it's not, you know what I'm trying to say? It's like tough to like
Yeah,
find like a
here's a
character that you're,
question. Here's a question for you. Do you think that Scorsese is just more honest with us in the way he tells a story that has
I do think
historical
that
accuracy?
because,
Because others have like you have like somebody who's like if you open a history book, somebody who's like clearly not bad and not good, but the movie would either display that character as good or really bad because movies make things simple. And here he's like, well, they're not all bad, they're not all good, but
I think, yeah, I mean, I
okay.
think what it is he's telling the truth as much as he can with this movie. He's not showing anybody to be all good or all, you know, like, I just feel like, he's trying to stay as close to the truth and being as honest as he can with like what he's showing and not trying to like, you know, sugarcoat anything. So it's, I guess what it happens is when you're, we're so used to seeing the other kind of movie, we watch this type of film and it actually kind of hurts to watch it in a way because we're not getting that, you know, a little bit of sugarcoatedness to it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so it's like, that's how I felt. And I respect that a lot. I mean, at the same time, I respect it, but I can't like say that I love it as much as like a Goodfellas or Casino because it just doesn't affect me in the same way. It doesn't, you know, it's more of like a, it's just, it's more of like a reckoning with like with like an ugly past, like, or like ugly history. So I, you know, you respect it, you understand it, you know what he's trying to do, but it's like you can't leave the movie feeling good about it, and it doesn't make you like, I don't know if I want to like rewatch it and like re-experience all those ugly feelings that I've, that I see. You know what I mean? That's what I'm, where I'm coming from. Like I was saying before, earlier offline, the filmmaking is excellent. You know, it's always great with Martin Scorsese, and that's not the, that's not the question. It's more of the subject matter is just so like grim. It's tough to like, you know, I'm thinking about this from like a rewatchability aspect. It's not the type of movie where I'm gonna like want to sit down and like, you know, just get back in, get into this story again very often. I mean, I'll watch it again, I'm sure, but that's all I'm saying. It's not that I'm saying the movie isn't good. It's just, you know, I'm coming from more of like a, you know, like a film geek place, you know, of like rewatching it like all the time and, you know, quoting lines and, you know, that type of thing. Like
No, it's
trying to
absolutely.
explain
I
myself.
was thinking because you earlier mentioned Schindler's List as an example, but I would say that even less extreme examples. I was going through my shelf earlier today, and I saw I had the Deer Hunter earmarked for a rewatch. But
Deer Hunter, yeah.
I have had that earmarked for rewatch for 2 years, I think, and
Yeah,
I've been
that's one of
just
my
putting
favorites
it
too.
off because I love that movie to death.
Yeah,
But
it
also,
is.
it's painful to watch, and it's
Yeah, that's
not a
another movie where it's like,
Good
you know,
time.
yeah, it's like, you know, like you have the all those memorable scenes in there, but then there's like, you know, it's not the type of like, you know, like compare it to like his previous movie, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. That's what I'm kind of talking about. Like a movie where it's like a crime movie and like, they're just kind of, you know, it's like a rollicking fun time road movie. And, you know, you can sit down and watch that, rewatch that over and over again, 'cause it's just kind of fun. Mm-hmm. When you get to the movies that are serious and like about serious subject matter, it's not that you don't love the movie. It's just like, you know, you can't put yourself through that pain all the time. You know what I mean? It's like a painful experience. But at the same time, you respect that they're doing that and they're showing that story and they're uncovering all the ugliness of what happened, and they're doing it in a, you know, like a beautiful cinematic way. It's just tough to like want to go back and like go through that again. So I don't know. That's all I can, only way I can explain it, I guess.
Yeah. And if we look at the story that he's telling here, obviously there's probably a million stories like that in the history of your country. Yeah. And it's always every now and then that a movie comes out that tries to, you know, be more honest about the thing, but also be a high quality sort of motion
cinematic
picture.
Story. Or,
and at the same time, I think this one struggled a bit in making enough at the box office. I mean, it's
I guess it didn't.
It didn't flop, but you know, people see the Scorsese, they see De Niro, they see DiCaprio, but then the average audience is a female teenager, like the statistical.
They want to see Barbie, or they want to see Barbie or something. Or,
yeah, you know. But even Barbie is probably too highbrow for the average.
Barbie is too highbrow.
But you know, Scorsese always had it tough with this one, I would say.
Right. Well, this one is this isn't like The Wolf of Wall Street, like we were saying. That's like this crazy, like comedic, like, you know, drug fueled, like adventure, like, you know, crime movie. This is like, you know, very, very downbeat and very grim. And, you know, there's a few light moments in there, but I mean, it's not like the whole story is just basically about people being killed for their money. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, people are just getting like shot in the back of the head, like every other scene almost. And it's just like, it doesn't make you feel good. And then all of a sudden it's also about like white people versus Native Americans, like, you know, and thinking they're better than, you know, the Native Americans. And, you know, as a white person, you don't walk out feeling very good about things. You feel like, you know, like we did some really terrible things to people. And
I also dug up a quote. This is from The Guardian, where it says, this is an epic of creeping existential horror about the birth of the American century, a macabre tale of quasi-genocidal serial killings.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it doesn't sound very fun, does it? It's pretty dark stuff.
And so, I was reminded a bit of There Will Be Blood.
But yeah, that's the oil.
A different,
and the,
different kind of movie, but it's also, I think, what Anderson did also is let the audiovisual layer of his storytelling give you a picture of, you know, again, greed and what it makes people do. And what the kind of characters that...
I love that movie, though. It's a really great movie. That's my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson film, actually, is There Will Be Blood. But
yeah, there's always people...
Also dealing with the oil and...
Yeah, there's always people who say, well, you know, this country was born in blood, and it's, you know...
Yeah. It's just... Well, it was. It was built... It was, like, basically built out of, like, corruption and killing off, like, different... You know,
people and also stuff, you know by I mean? Criminals, slavery mostly. And, you know, if you look at like the robber barons and the whatever, and who the I don't want to get too much into the history part, but it's you know, this is a perfect playground for Scorsese because his characters are always kind of
scumbags,
mostly criminals.
Right, there are a bunch of like I was thinking like the juxtaposition. What I loved about Killers of the Flower Moon the most was the beauty of the Osage people juxtaposed with like kind of like the scumbag white people, because that's what they were basically. And I mean, they were like just a bunch of like, you know, criminals and bums, like they were saying, like, you know, one guy said in the movie, one of the Osage people, he's like, these guys are just a bunch of bums coming in here and like, you know, taking all our land and, you know, marrying our women. And you know, they were, I mean, they, you know, you can't deny that. Like when you watch the movie, like you see all the beautiful, like Osage, like, you know, traditions and, you know, like all that stuff. And then you see the white people and they're just a bunch of like Ernest. He's basically just like a dumb hillbilly. You know what I mean? He's not.
And also,
there's nothing really to him. I mean,
Yeah, and this is the 1910s. This is not like pioneers with a higher ideal or
no, they're not
fleeing religious persecution or I don't know. These are, like you said, these are, you know, criminals lured out
money,
by hard work and good money.
He says it over and over again. He says, "I love money," and you know, I love it more than my wife. Almost love it more than my wife, or whatever he said, and that type of thing.
And but, this is still the Wild West because they're like out there and, you know, big money calling the shots until, you know, until they send what turns out to be years later, the FBI.
Yeah.
Because they they created a little bit too much ruckus.
Right. I mean, it's like they're not like an advanced people. They're just a bunch of like, you know, hicks and like, you know, just dumbasses basically. We see like, you know, the beginnings of like, you know, these of where the country started, but it's not very good. It's like a very like especially like Robert De Niro's character, he's like such a "we're doing this for their own good" type thing, or you know, like whatever that
I was just gonna say. There's as bad as they are, they still keep self-deceiving.
Right.
You know, and even him, like the Hale character, is, you know, I think he speaks the language somewhat, and
he does. He does speak a lot of the language.
You know, weddings and ceremonies, and there's like a facade or like a make believe of mutual integration and partnership and neighborly assistance or whatever you want to call it. But
yeah, he puts on like a whole like charade that he's like everybody's best friend and that type of thing. And
yeah, but it's just a really thin layer because he's really a scumbag, you know.
He is. I mean, he's just like
looting. It's so premeditated too, like this whole like spiel with the marriage and the licenses and this whatever the laws are of how you get that, and but it's so ruthless too. Oh my god. But then, if we step back a little bit from the bummer aspects of the movie, of course, this is again a beautiful movie, like visually, and of course, I thought it was very elaborate, the sets and the production.
Yeah, design. I mean, as far as like the sets and the, you know, the costume design and all, you know, just the authentic, like, you know, the stuff that went into it, it was just amazing. Like, you know, it was very authentic, and where they shot it, I guess they shot it like in the actual town, like where that happened too. It was like Fairfax, I think, it was like Fairfax, Oklahoma, and they went to that town and, like, you know, they worked with the Osage Nation, mm-hmm. and, you know, they talked to, and they tried to be like, you know, they tried to talk to all the family members that were related to a lot of the people that were killed in the movie and get all the information they could. And that made a big important part of it too.
Yeah. The one thing that kind of bummed me, I don't know how you felt, like I am not an enemy of long movies. I do think that we should go back to having intermissions and all that stuff. That's a different kind of debate, but still this one felt very long to me.
Like
I was not amused, and it just kept, you know, I thought it was unnecessarily slow in the middle part. I mean, it could have done well with some tightening.
Yeah. How long was it? 3 hours and 45 minutes. I can't remember. It was like
an hour too long, I think.
I mean, I think they could have probably shorten it a little bit, but yeah, as I was watching the movie Killers of the Flower Moon, a line from another movie came up when I was, you know, I was just sitting there thinking about it, and it made me laugh. It was from Blazing Saddles, where Gene Wilder's character says to Cleavon Little, "You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land, the common clay of the New West, you know, morons." That's just like what I thought when I was watching the movie because of all the guys, you know, just. And but also at the same time, when you think about it, like the majority of the times we'll be watching this movie is at home anyway. So it's like you'll initially see it like in the theater for, you know, sit there for 3 hours. But when you're going to be watching this for the rest of your life at home, like on, you know, in your living, you know what I'm saying, in your living room or whatever, wherever you are. But I mean, at the same time, I don't know. It's one of those things. I guess, I mean, even for me, I love movies, as you know, and I, you know, I'm a film geek and everything, but sometimes even like when you love the movie, sitting in a theater for like 3 hours is kind of tough. You like get kind of like, you know, uncomfortable and stuff. It just out of like, just physical wise, you know what I mean? You just,
Yeah, especially when you get older, like my knees sometimes, if there's not enough distance between the rows of the seats, and like,
yeah, you have to go to the bathroom or whatever it is, you know what I mean? Like,
that's why I think, I don't know what their problem is, not reintroducing intermissions, because, you know, you're going to sell more concessions, people are happier about the runtime of your movie, and you don't really, like, you don't lose anything. If you edit it properly so the intermission fits, then what's the big deal?
I don't really have a problem with that stuff, but
yeah, but then again, I have to say that for some movies, time flies by. Like, I don't know how long Dune was, but I was just mesmerized sitting there. And
was that like a really long movie? I forget, like, if it was like 2:45.
Wasn't short, but you know, I wasn't bored for a second.
Right.
But with Killers of the Flower Moon, I'm like, there was some stretches in the middle where I thought, oh my God.
Yeah. But I mean, sometimes I think if you revisit it, sometimes you'll like get into the flow again, like better. Like when you see it the first time, it's like jumping into cold water. But when you like revisit it and watch it a few times, then you get the flow of it better. And it doesn't seem like it's, you know what I mean? It doesn't, those little areas where it might have went slow for you the first time, like the second time or third time you watch it, like you'll get through that easier, I think. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm just saying, for this one, I think it would probably do that. Because I had the same thing happen with The Irishman. When I first watched The Irishman, I thought it was like, I had almost the same type of situation where I was like, you know, I felt like it was very draggy and stuff. But then I watched it like more and more, and I just enjoyed it more and more. I thought it was like I liked it more the second and third time that I watched it than the first time. So that sometimes that just happens. It's just, you know, it's just the pacing is different, and it's like not what you're expecting. You're just, you know, it's something, and it also like where you're watching it, like you were saying, in the theater. Sometimes when you're in the theater and you're just not super comfortable, and you know, if you can sit at home and watch it, sometimes it's just easier for you. But
anyway, yeah, it's true. The other time you're going to watch it is probably at home. But after back to Dune, just as an example, I went to see that in the theater at least three times in the time span of 1 or 2 weeks. I would never do that with this one.
Right. I mean, and like we were saying, like, I think for me, it's more of like it's more of the subject matter. It's not like a thing like where I want to indulge in that story and that world all the time. But then another movie, like, I'd go see like, you know, 5 or 6 times, because it's just really exciting. And, you know, this isn't like a movie where it's like exciting or fun. It's just not that type of film. So it's naturally like, it's just, it's not entertainment is basically what it is. It's not an entertaining film. It's like it's almost like a historical, you know, lesson or, you know, educational piece as opposed to like, you know, entertainment, which is great. Well, I mean, you know, but still at the same time, it's just the different type of film. Mm-hmm. It's just different.
Where would you rate it in, you know, if you had to do a top 15 or so, or top 10 of Scorsese movies?
That's tough, because, you know, my all-time favorite Martin Scorsese movies will always be like Goodfellas, Casino, Taxi Driver, you know. So I can't, it's tough to like rate, it's tough to, you know, put this where on the scale. I don't really know yet, but I mean, my initial reaction, it would be like towards like the bottom of my favorite movies, because it's just not, like I was saying, I gave the reasons why I feel that way. But then like there's a movie like Shutter Island where I feel like, you know, that's a dark movie, but it's like a psychological thriller. So there's like stuff going on in it where it's you're sort of entertained too, as far as like the dark stuff goes. But this one was just, it was like so grim, like as far as like the subject matter and just the historical, you know, the historical aspect of it, where it's, you know, it's real and you know like what really happened, and it just didn't turn out really well for anybody. And so it's like I guess I go more for the entertaining films than the, you know, the darker ones like that, like this one. I just, that's just what I like as a film person. Yeah. But it doesn't like mean that I don't respect the movie and I don't appreciate it. That's not what I'm saying. It's like what I was saying before, as far as like the entertainment value goes and that aspect goes.
Other than
where would you put rate it? I mean, if you could, had to do it, I mean.
Well, it's not as bad as The Age of Innocence. That's for sure. It's probably his worst, I would say. The more I think of it, the more I think it's his worst movie.
Really?
Yeah, I wouldn't rate it too high either. I mean, I think it's a very good movie, but you know, we're talking Martin Scorsese here. So we're like on a different scale, a rating scale here.
Right. And also, like, as film people, we love movies. So it's like, even if you love all the director's movies, you're going to have one that goes to the bottom of the, you know what I mean? Like, you just have your favorites of that, of what their work is. It's not like you're like trying to put anything down. It's just, you have that thing that you prefer certain kinds of movies or whatever. And that's just where they fall. It's not like you're trying to, like, you know, diss anybody, you know what I'm saying? That's not where we're coming from. It's just your own personal preference. Like,
plus, it's not really a judgment of the quality, because I think we both agree that it's an excellent movie, but it's just not as enjoyable.
Right. It just obviously isn't as enjoyable. It just isn't. It's just not that type of film. It's sort of like a downer, really. I mean, to be completely honest,
I don't want to ride this argument too much, but I think even a downer movie or a downer subject could be. Yeah.
Entertaining,
packaged better. No, it's just it could benefit from better pacing, different perspectives, whatever. It doesn't have to be a 3-hour pain to watch.
Yeah, I guess not. But I mean, I think you should like rewatch it a few times too, and then like, you know, try to like just get into it and like, you know, just see it in a different environment or something. And like, you know what I mean? Is at home versus in the theater. I think you'd probably like it, respond to it more. But I mean, it's not going to change the overall feeling you have of it. Like, you know, as far as the subject matter goes, that's not going to change, but
probably
maybe like some of those spots where you felt it was draggy or something, that you'll like, you won't see it that way. I think that happens sometimes. Also, like sometimes with music, sometimes you'll get like a new album or something. Like, you'll be like, oh, that track was sort of, I didn't really like that one. But then the more you listen to it, it gets better and better. It's weird. It's like it's like in your brain, like your brain gets the groove of it better after you've listened to it over and over again or something.
There's also one thing that I was afraid of going in that didn't really play out. I thought I would go in and be like, have like DiCaprio fatigue or something. But I think he was actually pretty, pretty solid.
Yeah. I mean, he's always good in these movies, but even his character wasn't very, like, there was no redeeming qualities to Ernest. He was just sort of like he's just sort of like a dim bulb. Like, he just doesn't, he just goes along with what King wants. And it's just not one of those characters where you're like, you know, there's nothing really to root for that character. You just see him doing what he's doing, and you think he's an idiot basically through the whole movie. And you feel bad for his wife, you know?
Yeah, is it the sixth movie he's done with Marty?
They did Gangs in New York. They did Wolf of Wall Street. They did The Aviator. They did Departed.
Shutter Island.
They did what else did they do?
Shutter Island.
Yeah, Shutter Island. And I think that's it. I think this is the sixth or something. I don't know.
Wow.
But I mean, all their work together has been amazing. I've loved all those films. I love all those movies. But this one is like, I'm just talking about the subject matter. I'm not talking about the performances. Everybody in the movie is excellent. Lily Gladstone is excellent. Robert De Niro is. And I loved all the supporting cast. They were very good. Like all the hillbilly, you know, the hick people and stuff. And all the, you know, the Native American Osage people were, and I really liked that. What was his name? Blackie, that guy, that character Blackie. I thought he was kind of funny. That guy that takes his car, steals his car. I just liked his, you know, the character. And then, you know, like we were saying, Brendan Fraser's character who comes in like, you know, like a friggin' whatever he did, you know, like he kind of yells like the first line in the movie, it just yells and like the whole place is like, what the hell? it was like a funny scene. And then, but I mean, I have no problem with like the performances or any of that stuff or the music or any, like basically anything. It's just the subject matter is grim, and that's the way it is, and you have to accept it, I guess. And
yeah, and maybe he got lost a little bit in the material. I mean, turning an elaborate novel into a movie is always difficult, but and then you're like, you're sitting in the editing room and you go, okay, what can we let go?
Certain scenes could have been left out or, you know, put in.
Maybe,
or, you know, I don't
maybe
know.
As he's getting older, he's getting worse at chiseling away the unnecessary parts. I mean, I have to say, I didn't like The Irishman. I absolutely didn't like Silence.
I like The Irishman a lot, but I mean, it's just a different type of movie. I mean, like if we're comparing it to like Goodfellas and Casino, I don't like it as much as those, but I mean, I thought it was a good, like, you know, it's almost like a deconstruction of the gangster movie, because it's like it's not like we were saying, like it's almost like this one where it's not like really super entertaining. I mean, you know, it has some good scenes in it, but it's not like, it's almost like a dour. I don't know how to explain it. It's just very like downbeat and kind of like a, like, you know, end of the road type crime movie. Not like, you know, like, you know, it's not like the glory days. It's like the, you know, showing like, you know, the it really was about the mundane aspects of the crime lifestyle to me. You know what I mean? It wasn't like Goodfellas, where it's like a rock and roll, like, you know, adventure, like, you know, fun movie. You know, even as much as like, you know, those characters are despicable, but you do get into it, and you're like, you know, kind of having fun watching Henry run around. And, you know, it's just, that's just part of the thing, why people like it. But The Irishman was just different. It was just coming from a different perspective of the gangster movie. Like, you know, at the end of the road with, like, you know, when everybody's getting older and people are dying, and like they're looking back and like they're trying to, you know, make sense of, like, you know, their life in that world of, you know, crime and stuff.
I was actually positively surprised by that Sopranos prequel movie, which I thought that I would hate, but I actually thought that was pretty good. I thought it was better.
Really? Because I had the same, I had the opposite reaction. To that. I thought it was terrible because it was just like, you watch The Sopranos and like you watch it for years and years and years, and they try to like do like a prequel, and it's like, I don't know. I just didn't like it, like any of the characters. I thought it was just kind of boring. I just didn't, it felt like just like a flop, like to me, a dud.
Okay, maybe it's all about expectations then, because I think,
yeah, I had like
expectations here were,
I had
really
wicked high expectations for
Irishmen that were really high. And
yeah, I had wicked high expectations for that movie, and it just totally let me down. So that's okay. Weird. I don't know. That's just, you know. And I have those things where like I had the same thing with Miami Vice, the Michael Mann movie, because I was a huge fan of the TV show. So then when they go and like they try to do like a 2-hour movie version of that, it's like it's never going to touch it. And I didn't really like Colin Farrell or Jamie Foxx in those roles. I just didn't think they were cast right. I just didn't like it. It's like, you know, who's going to be better than Don Johnson and Philip Michael Thomas? Like, you know, these days, I mean, it's just, and then like, you know, that went on for years and years, and it's just, they're trying to like recapture that magic. It just, it didn't happen to me. So I don't know. I'm picky with that type of stuff. I just didn't get it.
But, and did that get better to you?
No, because I never only watched it once and I didn't like it. So I didn't watch it again. But I mean, I knew why though. Like I had my reasons why I didn't like it. It wasn't like a thing where like, you know, you're like confused, or like, you know, did they not edit it right or something? Like, it's not that type of thing. It's more of like a thing where I'm coming from as like a fan of that show.
To me, it has grown up with rewatches, but I rewatched Black Hat the other day, and that's just as bad as it always been.
Do you like that one or you don't like it?
No,
yeah, I thought you were saying you liked it.
I actually bought the director's cut too, but I don't think that makes much difference. Just not a
I don't know. I never saw the movie, but like, you know, like my favorite Michael Mann movies are like Thief and Heat and, you know, Collateral and, you know, the Insider probably, like, you know, and Manhunter. But I never saw like some of the other ones, the newer ones. I never.
And with Scorsese, what did you make of Silence?
I didn't see the whole thing. I only saw part of it but I mean, as far as like the subject matter goes, I have a tough time with like religious themed movies. I've never watched Passion of the Christ yet. Like, I just didn't even want to watch it. And I'm not going to watch the sequel, which is like, you know what I mean? It's just bizarre. I don't know. I watched Last Temptation of Christ once and I thought that was really good, but overall I'm not like a big fan of like religious movies. I don't like that genre very much.
Yeah.
So I try to just stay away from that stuff and just focus on like, you know, like, I don't like big message movies. I don't like movies where like I feel like I'm being preached to all the time. I just don't like that type of stuff.
Well, I didn't find it preachy. It was just, as I was saying earlier, it's a very, very exhausting movie.
And isn't it kind of like a downer too? It's like a downer type movie.
Yeah, super. Yeah. But it's also like, it's just torturous. What you see on screen is all about you know, pain and suffering. And
you feel like you're being tortured watching it.
Yeah, and you're sitting there and you're in pain and you're suffering.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
it's
thanks,
not
Marty.
Fun.
Thanks, Marty.
Thanks. Thank you, Marty, for the torturous.
I mean, we all know he's like very Catholic, but he doesn't really, as you're saying, he's not really so much on the nose in this movie. Yeah. But this
it's
one,
just like, to like, you know,
he's processing some like neorealist, like Japanese cinema, something, whatever. And he probably got, you know, he got a little lost in the material too. And
it's like, you know, he's inspired by what he's inspired by. And sometimes that just doesn't connect with everyone. I mean, for me, like, you know, I love all like all the classic movies, but then he'll make other things where it's just, I just don't connect with that. And that's, it's not like you're not, it's nothing about disrespect or anything like that. It's just, you just don't, you're not interested in certain things. And, you know, maybe at a different age, I will be. Maybe when I'm like, you know, 60 or 70, I'll watch Silence and I'll be like, wow, that's like, you know, I really identify with this. But right now, I just don't really identify with certain stories, I guess, or something. And I,
yeah, and if you're going to watch a movie about missionaries, go watch The Mission, which is a better movie.
Yeah, I've seen The Mission and I like that one, but it's even that one I'm not like, you know, over the moon for. I don't know. I just don't like certain types of movies, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there's other ones that you could just connect with completely. But I think then, like we were saying, like what Guy was saying, like as you get older, sometimes you'll watch movies when you're younger and you just don't connect with them at all. Then maybe 20 years down the road, you will find something that you connect with in that movie. And that can happen sometimes too. So. You just have to try to keep an open mind, I guess, with stuff.
I'm wondering if we had talked about this before, but I think we have. As I mentioned, I don't like Casino as much as I did as really? A teenager. But then that's exactly what you're saying is at that time you watch it the first time, you're in a different place and you resonate differently with the material.
Right.
And maybe some things grow on you as you grow older and maybe rewatch it. Maybe some things lose their edge because you've seen more, you've lived more and
you've seen things and like a been there, done that type of feeling. Like, you know, you kind of like lose that type of feeling, like, cause you're above like that type of whatever it is, like, you know, whatever you're.
Plus also, I think we're getting numb as movie watchers because everything that you see for the first time, it feels fresh and whatever, maybe violent and edgy. And when you see it a million times, you're like, and after, and that's kind of, I don't want to end this on a down note, but the more you watch, the harder it is to get excited about stuff because it's
you're desensitized or something, right?
Yeah. It takes so much more to get you on the edge of the seat. And I applaud every filmmaker that manages to
keep doing it.
Get me in that seat in the theater and have me sit there for 3 hours and not, you know, long for the credits to roll. Bravo. Bravo, sir, Mr. Villeneuve, whatever. No, it takes a lot of, it takes a really good movie to get cineasts like you and me to
exactly
really flip out because
it does
too much.
Like, I don't know who's left now. Like, you know, maybe Quentin Tarantino's movies will like keep, you know, his last movie will be, if he does, you know, if that's actually his last movie, but maybe he'll be like the last one to like really, because I don't even go to the movies that much anymore, actually. I mean, I was saying like I, you know, it's just the place I used to go to, the theater closed. So like, I can't even go there anymore. So I have to go to another theater and like, you know, and I have to say a lot of the movies I'm just not interested in. I really don't care about a lot of this crap that's coming out. I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older or what, but I mean, I'm not into like a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, I didn't even want to see Napoleon. Like, that movie, Napoleon, the new Ridley Scott movie.
Same, actually. I'm not.
I just didn't really even care. Like, you know.
I'm not interested in Napoleon.
You know what I mean.
I'm not interested so much in Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good actor, but I mean, it's just certain things I'm just not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I get sick of these like friggin' like biopics like stuff. Like they're always like biopics all the time. I mean, it can be good too. Like maybe Maestro will be good. I haven't seen that yet. I'd like to see that just to.
Comes out next week.
It's really good, but
yeah.
Bradley Cooper movie, but you know, overall, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of those that genre. I don't really think they're that great usually.
Yeah, I wish I'd go more. Like, because I live in a big city, I can watch almost everything that comes out anywhere. Yeah. But then I'm too fucking lazy.
Yeah.
But the other problem, which I think is an actual problem that I'm not to blame for, I mean, I blame myself for the laziness because I have one movie theater that's just down the street. Like, can walk there in my PJs.
Don't they have like old? You can watch like you can go to like older movies too. Like,
yeah, that too. But the other problem really is like everybody is leading a busy life, so and you have all these movies that play for maybe a week on a shitty schedule, and by the time you're like getting psychologically and ready to watch it and you cleared
it's
out
gone already
and it's already gone. I'm like, fuck, man, give me
you'll
chance.
Have to just watch it on your TV, I guess, you know what I mean.
I mean, so much for you know, competing with the home cinema, like Don't play it on a Tuesday afternoon. Like, who's got time to watch a movie on Tuesday afternoon? Yeah.
Like Easy Rider at like, you know, 2 p.m. or something, like on like a Tuesday. It's like, how the hell am I going to go see that for you?
Yeah, and that's one part of the. And the other problem, and this has made the news with the Killers of the Flower Moon, is the super long movies.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, give me an intermission. Like, let me go to the bathroom without missing something. Let's stock up on popcorn. Everybody stretch their knees and get back into the seats, and nobody's going to complain about your runtime.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
Elmer Schoonmaker.
It's just, you know, they have to like take some things into consideration. Like when it comes to those long movies, they probably should do intermissions just to like, you know, just to make it a little easier for people. And, you know, then you don't walk out feeling like, you know, like, oh God, that was like a, you know, a friggin', you know, pain to try to sit through for like 3 hours, even though like, you know, you were interested to go see it, but it's like, you know, as far as the, you know, the pain of like just sitting in a seat for 3 hours, that's really the main part of it.
And having to go to the bathroom. I think, you know, the road shows back in the day with the overtures and that was like, you know, that was just something. And I like how Tarantino played with this when he had the intermission in Hateful Eight, and he came back with a voiceover and said, meanwhile, somebody puts in the coffee.
The roadshow version of the. Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like a lot of that stuff, sorry, but I mean, I just feel like a lot of that stuff is just like a gimmick. You know what I mean? It's just like 3D or something. Like, oh yeah, we're going to have like a, I don't know. I just don't, you know, I just want to go see a good movie. It doesn't have to be like fucking 100 millimeter size screen or anything like that. I just want to, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's just, you don't need all that. I just want to go see like a good movie. It doesn't have to have all the little gimmicks and stuff and, you know.
Yeah, in the end, it just has to, as you're saying, it has to be good, and you can't make something better by
that's what I'm trying to say. Now it's in 3D, so it's gonna be, this crap movie is gonna be better in 3D. Like, no, it's gonna be worse. I'm gonna be able to see all, more crap, but it's gonna be 3D now. It's just, you know, it's just stupid. So, I mean, I feel like movies are getting worse myself. Sadly, like the friggin' country is getting worse, but or something. I don't know. And that's another thing that. When all the stuff going on, like right now in the country, and then you go to see like a movie and it's like, so like it's such a downbeat movie. It doesn't make you feel very good. I'm like, now is the time where we need like escapism type movies. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, it's just,
yeah.
You don't want to go be like depressed with like, you know, like,
yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because for the most part, I think we look back at the cinema history and we see the industry as being like counter-cyclical. So when there's bad times, there's great movies.
Right.
But not always, I guess.
Right now, I don't know if I agree with that one. Bad times don't always make good movies, I don't think.
Yeah, because I was actually...
Bad times make bad movies.
We tend to forget the historical context of a lot of the movies we liked.
Yeah.
I was telling you earlier that I watched this Star Wars ripoff, Battle Beyond the Stars, or whatever, and that came out in 1980. Now I thought, okay, the 80s, what happened in the 80s? Yeah. You know what? Everybody was still scared of nuclear war and dominance.
That was like, that probably was like really at the end of the 70s, that movie, right? It was sort of like closer to the end of the 70s. It was like just the beginning of the.
Yeah, it came out in 1980. Like everybody was like scared of intercontinental ballistic missiles and stuff.
Right.
And
They were trying to cash in on Star Wars, though, too. Like that was another aspect of.
But we forget that Star Wars did not come out in a happy time.
No, it didn't. Like, it was almost like we were reading that book, Cinema Speculation, like, and we were reading about how, like, throughout the 70s, all those movies were like, which I'm a huge fan, as you know, of 70s movies. You know, we've said that 1,000 times, but all those movies were like very dark and very downbeat, like we were just talking about, like downbeat stuff. And like then all of a sudden like Rocky came out, and that was like a huge, like it brought people back to like feeling good again at a movie. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, they were so used to seeing like all these people where like all the heroes getting killed at the end of the movie. Now all of a sudden like the real hero is back and he triumphs at the end of the movie. And I think that was the same thing with Star Wars too. But it was like, you know, it was like it gave people a break from all those like dark 70s movies, like, you know, the new Hollywood films. It was like a.
And it's also something that we forget when we watch Westerns, like, you know, Westerns from the 30s through the 70s, they always worked because they were a genre that always allowed the filmmaker to put a lot of distance between what happens outside and the viewer, whether it's World War II or Vietnam or whatever. You could always go back to a story that takes place in the 1800s and it's good guy versus bad guy, you know.
And I also liked what Quentin Tarantino said about Westerns, which was really good, is that each decade of like what's going on in the world in that decade is reflected in the Western. So like, you know, the 70s was Vietnam was going on. So then like the Westerns kind of reflected that kind of that dire downbeat quality of, you know, just the negativity towards like, you know, politics and stuff like that. That was part of the thing. Then the 50s was like, you know, the Eisenhower days. So that was like a different type of Western. And then, you know, the 60s was like the hippies and stuff. And that was like a different, you know, acid, whatever it was, not acid Westerns, but like sort of like, you know, a hippie mentality of Westerns and, you know, or like Vietnam, that type of thing, like Wild Bunch, like all those movies. Yeah, but I mean, that's another aspect of those movies. And then like, you know, obviously we had the spaghetti Westerns and that was a whole other thing with, you know, they were telling different tales about like fascism and stuff, like Sergio Corbucci and all those movies.
I wonder with Scorsese, I think he's a very unpolitical director. I mean,
yeah, I think for the most part,
there's some stuff in Taxi Driver and so on, and
yeah, a little bit of
stuff. For the most part, he's that geek out of, you know, the New York and
movie brats, like the movie
brat kind of. And I find that interesting because, you know, he does not shy away from difficult material.
No,
but he doesn't strike me as a political person much.
No, I don't think he's into politics so much. I mean, he's more into just like human stories, like, you know, the human condition probably. I don't think politics is so much about it. Like Oliver Stone would be more like the political guy, right? God, is he a nutcase? I was watching him on a podcast. He's like, he really turned into a total looney tune.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I don't really like him anymore.
I mean, he was always kind of a, you know, out there.
Like controversial, but I mean, you know, some of the stuff he comes up with is just like BS. It's just stupid, like, you know.
Yeah, now he's all
like conspiracy theory type stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come on, man.
He really fell off the deep end there.
Yeah, it's just stupid. But yeah, I don't think Martin Scorsese is political very much. Like, I don't think most of those filmmakers really, you know, Steven Spielberg, I don't know. You know, what has he made that's political? Like, I don't know. Most of them are like genre filmmakers. Like, you know, I guess Brian De Palma has a little bit of political stuff in his movies. Like, you know, he did like some, like, you know, Blowout, like, you know, that has some politics in there. And like, you know, I guess he was really obsessed with like the Kennedy assassination. So that like influenced a lot of his like movies. And
yeah, but not from a political perspective, right? Like if you watch Blowout and stuff, he's more fascinated with, you know, technology and stuff.
Yeah.
It's not so much about who's the senator, and he doesn't really care much. But the maybe senator? It's something as you whoever was in the car when the tire blows out. I don't know, there was
it's like a senator, like
cover up.
It's supposed to be like his version of the Kennedy of Chappaquiddick, like, you know, the 10th Kennedy, like when he went into the
yeah exactly
ocean. Yeah,
and maybe as you said, these are like the movie brats. Like, I don't know, I have not read biographies about them aside from Scorsese, but maybe they're just, I don't want to say they grew up too privileged or too sheltered, but none of them strike me as filmmakers who had to, you know, process much of their historical context in their work.
No, you know? I don't think so. I think
they're not part of the
thing. Is, I think all those guys grew up in the. Yeah, I mean, all those guys like were growing up like during the Vietnam period. So I think it did influence them. But it was like look at like Taxi Driver. That's like sort of like, you know, Vietnam vet type story, and that, you know, that's political. Yeah,
that's almost like, you know, the exception in his filmography, right?
But I think like, you know, a lot of those guys, like, they wanted to make movie like genre films. They wanted to make like, you know, big budget entertainment movies. Maybe like their earlier films were a little bit like, you know, politically like inspired and stuff, but. But then, like, as they went on, they wanted to make like mass entertainment for people. So that's like what they did, like Jaws and, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, that wasn't, you know, there was like political stuff in there as far as like the Nazis go. Like, but I mean, you know, they weren't doing like political movies. You know what I mean? They weren't doing like just movies about politics, period. They were doing like entertainment, you know, genre entertainment. Mm. But I mean, you know, I guess you'd have to just look at different, you know, different filmmakers, like William Friedkin. He did like, you know, he didn't really do any political stuff, did he? He did like French Connection and, you know, The Exorcist, and, you know, they all kind of did like genre films.
Yeah, true. Now that I'm looking at Spielberg's filmography, he does have some stuff in there, but it's not the none of them is really much known for a political voice, or none of those would be considered political in any way. Like, as you're saying, they're entertainment.
Right. Entertainment directors,
most and really. Foremost, and maybe genre filmmakers. We wouldn't call Spielberg a genre filmmaker, but him, like, he goes through different genres. Well, and
yeah, I mean, well, he is, though, because I mean, look at all his movies. It's like Jaws is like a, you know, Nature Strikes Back movie, and Raiders of the Lost Ark is like a, you know, an adventure movie, and, you know, he's done all in the Close Encounters is an alien movie, and, you know, on and on. But, you know, they've all done, tried to do, and I like the directors that kind of like do all different types of movies too. Like, they don't just stick with one specific kind. They kind of like do little, they try different genres, and then some of them are really good at certain ones, and other ones they're not good at.
Scorsese even did an animated movie, right?
Yeah. What's that?
Scorsese did an animated movie too.
Oh yeah. Was it Hugo or?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was that. Yeah. Well, that was like a 3D movie, wasn't it? Like a 3D.
Yeah, like it was computer animated, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you know, it was. I'm sure it was the younger people liked it. I mean, I wasn't really into that one so much, but, you know, I like more of like the crime, like psychological thriller movies. But the younger people probably liked Hugo a lot.
I think I want to rewatch some of those that I don't have so much of a memory about. I want to watch Bringing Out the Dead again. I think
that's a good one too. Yeah,
overlooked, I think, a little bit in his filmography.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like that one with Nicolas Cage. And
I recently watched the After Hours, which is quite a riot.
Yeah, that's a fun movie too. And I love King of Comedy too. That's become one of my favorites. Yeah. Pupkin.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lewis and Sandra Bernhard. I just, you know, that movie is one of my favorites.
Yeah, so my hope is that maybe some sort of a, if I want to try my hand at a conclusion, I think Killers of the Flower Moon, what I take with me is, A, as you said, maybe something that will grow upon rewatching.
Yep.
So I will give that a shot. The second thing is, Scorsese hasn't said anything about retiring, so I hope that after Killers, maybe... he does maybe a handful more, and some of them are more shorter movies, more entertaining ones.
I want a 90-minute Martin Scorsese movie next, please.
It's such like just a trailer kidding. For him.
Just kidding, but I think he's, the next movie that they had planned was another David Grann book, based on another David Grann book with The Wager. It's called. It's like a shipwreck type story. Like, I don't know exactly what it is, but
also, why doesn't he do like a mini series? I mean,
yeah,
Killers of the Flower Moon could have been a 4-part HBO thing too.
like a 12-hour mini series, Killers of the Flower Moon, with with Ernest, like, you know, like you just have him like being like a dim bulb, the whole thing. You know, I felt so bad for his wife. Like, he was giving her the insulin, and like she just was like in bed for like 2 hours, like just like, you know, puking into a pot and like, you know, just sitting there like sweating,
he's poisoning her. And at the beginning, I wasn't sure if he really understood. And
that's the whole thing about
that. I think at the beginning, he really doesn't understand because he's really too stupid, but then he does. And then he still like,
but
goes along with it. In the end, he has kind of, he has a bit of a mixed feelings, but you never see him really turn the corner.
Right. And one part that I didn't really think made sense to me was when he hired AC Kirby to blow up the house. Remember that part? Like when he like hired him and he's like, oh yeah, you got to do it today. King wants it done today. Damn it. And like, you know, he's like getting all pissed off. And then like they blow up the house and he like walks over to the house and like looks like he's like, you know, devastated because the house got blown up. Well, he just wanted him to do it. So why would he be like all upset about it? I didn't get that. Like, was it just because it was such a, like a massive explosion or something? And like, he didn't expect it to be that big or what? I don't know why. You know what I'm trying to say? Like when he was, you know what I'm saying? Cause he wanted him to do it to begin with. So why would he be like all shocked when it happened? I didn't get that really.
There was something about, wasn't there a point that that got reached where they couldn't call it off anymore. Something like that. So yeah, it's.
I don't think he was going to call it off, though, was he? I don't think so. I think they were just going to do it, but and then like they did it, and then you know the whole half the neighborhood got blown up, and he like walked over like with like a look on his face, like oh my god. But it's like he's the one that wanted them to do it to begin with. So I didn't get that. Like you know, were we supposed to feel like bad for him because it happened or something? I don't know. I just didn't get it. I must have missed that one, but. You know, the whole movie, and then, like, as far as him giving his wife the shots and stuff, does he know that he's poisoning her? Does he not know? It's like, you're never really completely sure, like, because then at one point he takes some of the stuff himself, remember? That little, he takes, like, puts a little bit in his drink and takes some and, like, passes out, and it's just, you don't know what's going on. Does he know or not know?
As you said, it's almost like he's so stupid. He is really, like, only...
He was a dumbass.
That a kid does that. A kid tries something that doesn't know what it is, but still tries it.
I don't know.
What?
But I mean, as far like, you know, there's even like Leonardo DiCaprio's performance is great, but there's not a lot to like, you know, to like about the character. Like he's just sort of like a blank, like character, like a blank, like, you know, a board or something. Like, he just doesn't have any redeeming qualities. Like he's not really especially charming, he's not especially like funny, he's not especially anything. He's just like an idiot like through the whole movie. And I guess that's the whole point. I mean, they weren't trying to like, you know, they were trying to make him like, you know, not have any specific thing to hang on to with that character, which is fine, but then like we were saying, it doesn't make you want to like go back and you know what I'm saying? It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice.
It's just tough to
for our main protagonist.
I think it was meant to be that way too, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you're not satisfying anybody's like, you know, you're not satisfying the viewers like, you know, interest like in the character by doing that, because you just don't care about the character. You just don't think he's any good. He's like no good, so you don't want to like spend any time with the character, basically. Like, why would I want to go back and watch that again? You know what I'm saying? It's not like a Henry Hill type character where he's like, you know, he is doing bad things, but at the same time he's like, you know, he's actually pretty kind of like a fun person to like watch. Like, I don't know, it's I guess that's the whole point of the character. He's trying not to do that. He's trying to like, you know, make, you know, he's trying to make it like kind of like unattractive to watch someone like that.
And maybe that's why Scorsese comes out in the end and feels like he has to,
I'll say
explain it, but be like, well, you know, that's how it was.
That's the way it was. And then like, I did like the ending, like how they kind of just turn it into like a radio show. Like, you know, like we watched the real deal of what happened, but then they just kind of like sugarcoated it. And that's exactly what he didn't want to do with the movie.
I'll follow your note about maybe giving it another shot.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you should. I mean, it's, you know, it's a Martin Scorsese movie, so obviously you should, you know. But like you were saying, like certain movies, you're not a big fan of Age of Innocence, and I've only seen that once, so it's like that's another one where the whole subject matter wasn't really my bag. I just wasn't that into that one, but.
But I do hope that his next one isn't going to be like this one. So maybe he's, you know, I would also feel bad about him, you know, losing touch with his audience in late in his career. I think that's sort of what Tarantino is afraid of. That, you know,
you start making movies that aren't really like the type of stuff you should be making or the type of stuff that people know you for or whatever. Like, you know, and I understand that, but. But I like we were talking about as far as the time frame of the movie goes, it's like I think really what it was about was the subject matter was such an important thing. He didn't want to just like rush through it, and he wanted it to be something more than just the normal, you know, 2 hour, like, you know, watch it and forget it type deal. He wanted it to be more of like an epic story. And I think it deserved that too, really, in a way. You know what I mean? I can understand that aspect of it, but. But then, you know, we were saying it. Sometimes it's tough when you're to the fact that it is that type of subject matter. It's tough to sit through that for like 3 hours and like, you know, how many times are you gonna see this movie at the same time? It's like it's just one of those things. It's a tough. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, also, I wouldn't call myself a history buff, but I'm also not. I'm also interested in history, but also this particular aspect of history, I'm not interested enough to now go out and buy the novel or something like that. I think it would make a lot of sense for viewers of Killers of the Flower Moon who like the subject but haven't read the novel to maybe now and dig a little bit deeper, sort of. But that's not going to be the case for the majority of the audience, probably.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. And but I mean, overall, I thought it was a very good movie. Like I was saying, it's just the subject matter is dark, and it's not a thing like where I'm going to want to revisit it very often, I don't think. I mean, I'm going to watch it again. I've already watched it a couple times now, but that's really all. I don't really have any major, like, you know, perspective to give on it other than that for now. Like I was saying, like, you know, it's this movie just came out. It's going to be years until I can really, like, you know, honestly rate it where I put it in my favorite Martin Scorsese film list. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I just don't like that's the thing about Letterboxd too. It's like, you know, people, they see a movie once and they give it 5 stars right off the bat. I don't really think that's why a lot of times I don't really rate movies at all, because I don't feel like I just don't feel like it's honest. I think a lot of it is just a bunch of, like, you know, like, just, you know, people trying to, like, you know, make it look like they know more than someone else or something. I don't know. I just don't really like that whole star rating thing for some reason.
Well, 5 stars is always like, okay, so if you give a movie 5 stars, like, what's left? Like,
I mean,
I think the 5 stars are reserved for the Apocalypse Nows and the Blade Runners of our,
or like, Goodfellas. Or something. You're gonna give, like, I mean, what are you rating it? Like, what are you like rating it against? I mean, a lot of these people that are rating movies, they probably haven't even seen half of, like, the classics that have been out that are, you know, that are on the AFI top 100 or something, yet they're giving a brand new movie 5 stars. I just don't, like, trust it, like, as a system very much. I don't know. I just, one of those things for me, I just don't buy into it. But anyways, that's another discussion. But
yeah, I mean, you know, I think that the problem of what are you rating it against is exactly also the problem for Killers of the Flower Moon, because we are rating it against the rest of his filmography.
Right. And then, like, maybe someone will give, like, Batman versus Superman 5 stars, but then they'll give, like, Citizen Kane 3 stars. It's like, F you. I just
yeah, get out.
It pisses me off, though, like, as, like, a film fan. I just don't, like, you know what I mean? It's just so stupid. It's just, it's, you know, that's the type of stuff that, like, gets under my skin as, like, a film buff. Like, I just don't like it. So anyways.
Yeah,
but anyway, nobody, we'll wrap things up before we, like, you know,
yeah, before we, like, start ranting like a bunch of old people. youth these days.
All right, I'm gonna start throwing stuff now. Throwing glasses and stuff. Okay, yeah. So this has been Furious Cinema Podcast. I'm Pete Roberts, and thanks to Seb for chatting about Killers of the Flower Moon and other Martin Scorsese movies today. We had a good time, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Take care. I'll see you.
And that's that.